This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Oracle Year, a novel by Charles Soule, performed by Charlie Thurston. Part 1. Fall. Chapter 1.
Anything can happen, Will Dando thought. In the next 5 seconds, in the next 5 years, anything at all.
He tipped his beer up, finishing the last few swallows. He set about the task of getting the bartender's attention, which looked like it could be an ordeal. The bar hadn't been crowded when he'd arrived 3 or so hours earlier, but it had filled up once the game started. Jets, Raiders. The Jets were down by 3 with not much time left on the clock. Will wasn't ordinarily much for sports. He wasn't sure he'd ever watched a football game all the way through. This one was different, though. It was important. It was important because its outcome was one of 108 things Will knew that hadn't happened yet. The bar was just a dive near his apartment, without much to recommend it other than the base level offered by every bar in the world. Drink there, and you weren't technically drinking alone. Will had picked the second best seat in the house, a stool as far away from the door as possible. Unseasonably frigid November gusted in every time anyone came in or out, sweeping along the bar, stirring the little puddles of spilled beer and wadded napkins. The first best seat in the house, the stool farthest from the door and the wind, was directly to Will's left. It was occupied by a truly lovely girl with chestnut-colored, slightly curly hair. She seemed to be a friend of the bartender. She certainly got her refills more quickly than Will did, and a good 2 out of 3 seemed to be left off the tab. But there were any number of reasons for that, really. The hair alone. Will had caught her name, Victoria, and he was considering saying hello to her. He had been considering it, in fact, for most of the past 3 hours. His phone buzzed. He looked down, Jorge on the ID, which meant a gig, a good one. Probably a party at some cool venue downtown, for solid money. Even the worst Jorge job was generally a pretty good time, and on occasion they were spectacular. He had hired Will for lingerie fashion shows, post-concert after-parties packed with industry people, no-joke studio session work, even a few opening band tours. Any future Will might have as a working bassist in New York City was tied more or less directly to Jorge Cabrera. Will tapped the front of his phone, declining the call, just as the bartender finally worked his way down to his end of the bar. "One more?" he asked, gesturing to Will's empty beer bottle. "Yeah," Will said. "Same again." On an impulse, Will turned to his left and smiled at Victoria. "Get you a drink?" Out of the corner of his eye, Will saw the bartender pause slightly as he reached into the cooler. Maybe they were more than just friends then. But so what? Victoria turned her head to look at Will. "Oh, thanks," she said, just friendly enough, no more. "But I know the bartender. I drink for free." "Sure, right," Will said. "But, just thinking out loud, paid for's better than free, right?" Victoria tilted her head slightly.
"That's okay, thanks."
She made a point of looking back at the television, about as emphatic a shoot-down as she could give short of changing seats. The bartender returned, skidding a cardboard coaster out in front of Will and slapping a fresh beer down. Maybe a bit harder than necessary. The Raiders scored a touchdown and made the extra point, extending their lead to 10. Groans rolled up from most of the crowd in the bar, including Victoria. On the bar in front of Will was a black, spiral-bound notebook, the cover creased like an old leather wallet. Spilled coffee had stained the pages along the bottom edge a fungusy brown. Will ran a thumb down one corner, flicking through the pages. He stared at the back of the bar, at the multiple distorted reflections of himself and the bottles lined up on the long shelf. He gripped the notebook, bending it along the creases. He thought about what he knew, and what he could do with what he knew. Shots from inside the deli, the lucky corner. Two quick, then a pause, then three more, one after another. Then a long break, a held breath. Decisions were being made inside. More shots, a lot of noise. A splash against the front window of the deli, from inside. Dark at the center, tinged red at the edges where it wasn't as thick, and the sunlight could shine through it. Will toyed with the label on his half-finished beer, and considered the beers he'd already had. He thought about good decisions and bad decisions, and how hard it could be to tell them apart. Will turned back to Victoria. "Jets fan?" he said.
"Yeah," she said, still watching the television.
"You want to know who's going to win this game?" Will said.
"I think I already know," she said.
"You might be surprised," Will said. "The Jets will win by 4. Victoria snorted, which still somehow managed to come out cute.
"2 touchdowns with 2 minutes on the clock? Come on. Maybe I should have Sam cut you off."
"Wait and see," Will said.
"And how are you so sure? You the Oracle?"
Will hesitated. "That's right," he said. Victoria finally looked away from the television.
"Uh-huh," she said. "You know how many times I've heard that line in the last few months? But you're using it wrong. You're supposed to predict that we'll wake up together tomorrow morning."
Will grinned. "I don't know about that. But the Jets will win this game."
"By 4, Victoria said.
"That's right.
If that happens, then I'm all yours. You can take me home and do whatever you want with me."
Will's eyes widened.
"Huh. Don't hold your breath," Victoria said.
On the second down in the Jets' next possession, one of the New York receivers caught a 30-yard pass and ran it all the way to the end zone. The bar erupted. Will glanced at Victoria. She was staring at him. "See what I'm saying?" Will said.
"Yeah," Victoria said. "But they've got a long way to go, and not much time to get there."
"Mm-hmm," Will said. The Jets kicked their extra point, and the Raiders took possession again. A dark splash red at the edges where it wasn't as thick. Will stood, grabbing the notebook and tucking it under his arm.
"Where are you going?" Victoria asked.
"I'll be back in a sec. Don't worry. We've got a bet, remember?"
"I very much do."
Will walked quickly to the back of the bar. He slipped into the men's room and locked the door. He put his hands on either side of the sink's cold porcelain and looked into the mottled mirror. A cloudy, utterly ordinary reflection stared back. Late 20s, scruffy, underemployed. But of course, the cover wasn't the book. He hadn't been ordinary for a while now. Another cheer from the bar. Will couldn't see the TV, but he knew what had happened. The Jets had forced a fumble and ran it in for another touchdown. The bar was going nuts, and a gorgeous girl was starting to think that maybe she actually had met the Oracle that night. He could have her, and every other woman in the place. He could have the entire bar if he wanted it. It would only cost him about 10 words per person. Will closed his eyes. He rolled the notebook into a cylinder and squeezed it with both hands, his knuckles turning white. Good decisions and bad decisions. "God damn it," he said. Will realized he'd left his coat draped over his bar stool. Stupid. He slipped out of the men's room, risking one glance back into the bar. The beautiful Victoria was staring at the television, clapping as the Jets prepared to kick the extra point. They'd make it. Up by 4. The bar had a back exit near the kitchen. Will stepped outside, feeling the air spike his lungs as soon as he took a breath, He walked out into the night, not looking back.
Chapter 2 Lee Shore stared down at her salad. She'd allowed herself some excesses. Croutons, cheese, sliced up bits of fried chicken, the good dressing, which they should just call pudding and be done with it. Almost $15 worth of moral support via the build-your-own bar. She'd managed maybe 2 bites. Lee pushed her fork into her salad and wiped her hands on a paper napkin. She crumpled it and dropped it on her tray. Reflexively, she grabbed her phone and swiped it open. A Reddit thread popped up on her screen, with a single post pinned to the top. At the top of the page, 2 short sentences. Tomorrow is today. These are the things that will happen. Below that, a list. 20 brief descriptions of events, none longer than a few sentences. Each was accompanied by a date, spread over a period of about 6 months. This list was all over the web. Every news aggregator site maintained its own copy, each with its attendant thread of thousands of comments beneath it. But the Reddit post was the place it had first appeared, via a link to an anonymously posted paste bin. The site. Everyone knew what you meant when you said it. Lee scrolled to the bottom of the list. Nothing had changed in the 5 minutes since she last performed exactly this same maneuver. She looked up from her phone. Around the cafe, roughly 8 out of 10 people were on their phones. She saw the site on at least 2 of those screens, just in her eye line right at that moment. Lee clicked away and pulled up her email. Nothing. Or at least not the email she was waiting for. She hesitated, frowning, then pulled up another document on her screen. An article, her article, about 3,000 words. Nicely supplemented with images, links, everything the discerning readers of Urbanity.com expected in their content. The article was about the site. Lee could have chosen anything, but the site was fascinating. Ever since its appearance, it felt like the only thing that really mattered, the only puzzle worth solving. She'd been in line at a Starbucks when her phone had buzzed with a text, a link. Sent to her by her friend Kimmy Tong. Clicking through, not understanding why Kimmy thought this was worth her time. Giving her order, then Googling around a little bit while she waited for her latte, realizing what the site was actually claiming to be, and just staring at it, reading it over and over again. Not hearing her name when the barista called it, until he all but shouted it right in her face with the bitchiest possible inflection. The site emerged into the public consciousness so quickly it was like a UFO appearing over Washington. From one day to the next, 1 hour it seemed as she remembered it, it became the only thing anyone could talk about. 20 events, all accompanied by dates. The first 2 had already happened by the time the site went viral, but the rest all were slated to occur in the future. Since then, 4 more of those dates had passed, and on each, the event on the site occurred, exactly as it described, or more accurately, predicted, by an unknown person, present, supercomputer, or alien that had become known as the Oracle, in the same way that the site had become the site. Lee continued scanning the text of her article, doing one last check for sense and typos. She had chosen to write about the Oracle precisely because the subject had already been so exhaustively covered. A strategic thing. If she could bring some new angles, new interpretations, then it was almost more impressive than writing about something less familiar. She thought she might have pulled it off. She tried to get into the Oracle's head in a way that most articles didn't seem to attempt, ignoring any discussion of the effect of the site's prophecies on the world. And focusing more on how they might affect the prophet. That was the idea, at least. She'd read the piece too many times to be sure what it was actually about anymore. But her intentions were good. Lee's current beat at Urbanity.com was city culture, shorthand for list-based clickbait about New York's clubs and shows and celebrity squabbles, and the best bagels in Brooklyn. Urbanity did produce some actual reportage, not much, but a little in some of the other sections. And her Oracle article was something like an audition to get over to that side of things. Lee flips back to her email account. Still nothing. She frowned, frustrated. Then tapped her phone a few times, and her article went live. Now freely available to every one of the site's millions of readers. The die was cast. She stood up and emptied her tray into the trash bin, reflexively twinging a bit at the waist. She walked the 2 blocks back to the office, her stomach churning. Urbanity had a few floors of a nondescript building at 50th and 3rd. Just a cubicle farm with conference rooms along the sides on 6, and executive offices up on 11. Lee sat down at her desk, glancing at the small mirror hanging on one wall of her cube. Her relationship with her reflection was evolving in a frustrating way as she neared 30. Every look was accompanied by a little held breath. She didn't know what she expected to see. Maybe some echo of her mother's face, streaks of white in her hair, or lines fanning out into the dark skin around her eyes. "Why did you do that?" she asked herself. She had a job in New York City, writing for a living, actually using her journalism degree, more or less. She could pay her bills with a minimum of month-to-month shuffling and humbling calls home. Fully half her friends couldn't come close to any of that.
"So why did you just do that?" she repeated to herself.
A head appeared over Lee's cubicle wall. Eddie, one of the company's photographers. Approaching middle age, not fighting it all that hard, and very good at what he did. Eddie had taken some of the photos for her article about the site and helped her lay it out. He was smiling.
"Just saw your article went live, Lee. Good for you. I told you it was solid. Did they say anything about moving over to news, or was this a one-time thing? Either way, they almost never take work from people on other desks, as long as I've been here. You should be proud you got the green light."
Lee looked back at him, saying nothing. Eddie's eyes narrowed a little.
"You didn't," he said.
The fundamental truth to Lee Shore was this, something she'd realized years back, but could not seem to change, no matter the opportunities, long-term relationships, and overall happiness it denied her. Nothing was less interesting to her than something she already had. And nothing was more interesting to her than something someone told her she could not have.
"I was tired of waiting, Eddie. I emailed them the article over a week ago, and they didn't even respond. You know what I'm capable of, right? You just said so. I needed to show them something. I've been asking for a change of assignment for coming up on 2 years, and they just keep sending me out to bullshit club openings or whatever. When the verticals come back on this article, it'll speak for itself. Sure, maybe it's a little bit of a gamble, but..."
Eddie exhaled loudly, more of a grunt than a sigh.
"You know this site is owned by a multinational entertainment conglomerate, right? You can't just post things. It's not your Tumblr. People get sued over this sort of thing, Lee, and they most definitely get fired."
Eddie turned away.
"I'm gonna go check your goddamn article and pray you didn't credit me on it."
Lee opened her mouth, about to say she'd pull the post off Urbanity's site. But what would that do, really? It was already out there. The first prediction to happen while people were paying attention was a claim that 14 babies would be born at Northside General Hospital in Houston on October 8th. 6 male, 8 female. Exactly correct, even though the last infant was born at 2 minutes to midnight, and the mother was a woman who showed up at the hospital about half an hour earlier. She wasn't even from the area. She was driving through with her husband. Not easy to stage. But naysayers on blogs and message boards came up with all sorts of ways it could have been done. The most popular was that the CIA ran the site and had induced labor in a number of women at a secret facility near the hospital, lining them up like brood mares to make sure everything worked out as planned, sending out the lucky lady to the hospital a little bit before midnight. Never mind that the CIA worked exclusively outside the United States, and inducing labor was far from a precision maneuver subject to split-second timing. And why would any woman agree to something like that? And. The next prediction was dated about 2 weeks after the births. Pacific Airlines Flight 256 loses cabin pressure on its descent for landing in Kuala Lumpur. Although the plane lands safely, 17 people are injured. There are no deaths. Again, the sight was dead on. A bird hit a window weakened from lack of maintenance, and it cracked just enough to cause a blowout. Exactly 17 people were hurt, no more, no less. And even that could have been faked, people claimed. But the world was much less willing to take the conspiracy theorists seriously on that one, because that event had been caught on film. A crew of enterprising Indonesians brought a camera out to the airport and filmed Flight 256 as it came in for a landing. The clip was online within hours, and it very clearly showed the flock of birds entering the frame. Most turned at the last minute, a few didn't. When you started asking people to believe that the CIA had developed the ability to remotely control birds and had somehow rigged the plane so that only 17 people would get hurt, it became easier to just believe that the sight was real. Someone out there could predict the future. The Oracle. Most religious groups either denounced the sight or pointedly ignored it. A few embraced it. Politicians and pundits incorporated the site into their rhetoric without a blip. Invitations to the most exclusive events, offers of sexual favors, payments, employment were extended to the Oracle, all of which were, as far as anyone knew, ignored. Fads appeared based on the content of the predictions. Chocolate milk was the drink of choice for children and adults alike due to April 24th. Mrs. Luisa Alvarez of El Paso, Texas, purchases a quart of chocolate milk, something she has not had in 20 years, to see if she still enjoys the taste as much as she did when she was a child. Bartenders across the country had learned to mix brownouts, chocolate milk, amaretto, and vodka. And if the Oracle wouldn't make him or herself known, the public satisfied itself with the people named in the predictions. Luisa Alvarez had been snapped up as a spokesperson for Hershey's. She seemed to enjoy the spotlight immensely, until some sort of fanatic tried to assassinate her at a press event. The would-be killer's motive? To prevent the Oracle's prediction from coming true. To save the world from the pernicious influence of a false prophet. Luisa had been placed under heavy security after that, her public appearances drastically curtailed. Hershey's didn't want anything to interfere with her ability to buy that milk when the big day came. The word from Anonymous and its various allied hackery organizations was that the site had been set up using simple existing anonymization tools that all but guaranteed that no one but the Oracle would know who the Oracle was, or be able to issue new predictions. Their current verdict: whoever set things up for the Oracle was extremely conversant with the ins and outs of modern data security. Beyond that, they didn't have much to say. The world's markets endured a series of roller coaster climbs and reversals. The outcome of the next presidential election was suddenly thrown into doubt when Daniel Green, the incumbent, fumbled his first few opportunities to comment on what the site's emergence meant to the country. There were no answers, not yet really, just the hope that at some point all this would make sense. Clearly a plan was at work, but what, how, where, when, and most importantly, why, no one knew. Not yet. Lee settled back into her chair as she read the last few lines of her article. It was better than she remembered. Not perfect, but at least as good as most of what Urbanity published on what passed for their news desk. Eddie needed to relax. A ping. An email hitting her work account. Lee pulled it up. From jreimer@urbanity.com. Upstairs, please. Reimer. Lee stared at her monitor for 10 seconds or so. Her hand reached out slowly and clicked her mouse,
minimizing the email app and revealing a previously hidden browser window behind it, showing the site. Of course it was. Reflexively, Lee's hand moved. She hit refresh, even though she cringed a little bit inside as she did it. The site never changed. But it had. At the bottom of the page, after the last prediction, six new words had appeared. This is not all I know. Below that, an email address. Chapter 3.
Please tell me when my dad will come back.
God will punish you, demon. Reverend Branson says,
Combien d'années jusque ce que la France gagne la Coupe du Monde?
Will replaced the sheet of paper on the stack piled against the wall of his apartment, one of three, each about 4 feet high, totaling thousands of pages. Every sheet was densely covered with small font text, both sides. Questions, mostly, for the Oracle. Since the email address had gone live on the site, millions of messages had come through, which could be broken down into variations on three questions. Will I get what I want? How can I get what I want? Why can't I get what I want? The first 100,000 or so had been printed and now sat piled between some of Will's instrument cases, basses and guitars standing upright, guarding the questions like sentries.
Stop reading them, Will, came a voice from behind him.
I know. It's not easy, Will said. Will flipped open one of the cases and pulled out a well-worn Fender P bass. He slung it over his neck and turned to face the rest of the room. Not much to see. A trash-picked coffee table, top like a spirograph, all interlocked drink rings and long swirling scratches, standing between some hand-me-down living room furniture. The rest of the apartment was crammed with gear. Instruments, music stands, neatly looped cables, effects pedals, a small set of digital production equipment, more storage unit than living space. Sitting in the apartment's sole armchair was Hamza Sheikh, smiling eyes, tightly cropped hair, extremely white teeth.
None of these questions matter anymore, Hamza said. We got what we needed from them. They're just noise.
I bet they matter to the people who asked, Will said. Can you answer any of them?
Not really.
Then you don't have to feel guilty. Those questions were always unanswerable. Don't beat yourself up just because people want to know things.
This isn't a logic thing, Will said. I just feel bad about it. Giving people hope for something I know we won't ever deliver.
Hamza looked back down at the laptop he had opened on the coffee table. Next to sloppy piles of paper, binders he'd assembled full of research on the people they were about to speak to, spreadsheets.
Get your head on straight, Hamza said,
typing a few updated figures into one of the tables on his screen.
This is the most important day of either of our lives. If we pull this off, you can help anyone you want. Be my guest, brother.
Will began to play a bass line on the instrument slung around his neck. A four-note repeating pattern.
I know that one, Hamza said, not looking up from the keys. What's it called?
The OJs, Will said. For the love of money.
Yeah, that's right, Hamza said. My favorite song. Get over here, it's almost time.
Will walked over to the couch and sat down, unslinging the bass and leaning it up against the cushions. He shifted one of the piles of paper on the coffee table, revealing his own laptop, almost as banged up as the table itself, and the Oracle notebook. Will flipped open the screen of his computer, then took the notebook and held it up, showing it to Hamza like a tent revival preacher presenting a Bible to his flock.
Before we do this, Will said, let's talk it through. One last time.
He lowered the notebook, twisting the cover in his hands.
You really think this is it? He continued. The reason I was sent these predictions? Just money?
Hamza took his hands off the keyboard and sighed heavily.
Okay, Will, one last time.
He looked up, directly at Will.
We have an opportunity here like nothing I've ever seen in my life. Big enough that I quit my job to help you. A job at an investment bank that in a bad year netted me a quarter mil with bonus. Big enough that I've been lying to my wife about why I did that. I'll put aside the fact that we have been each other's best friend for over 10 years, and that I'd expect there would be more trust happening here.
Hamza, come on. It's not...
Will began. Hamza held up a hand, and Will stopped mid-sentence.
I will also not mention that you need this so much more than I do. I will not say any of that because, as your good friend, it would be rude. However...
Hamza reached for the notebook, and Will yanked it back. A pause as they both processed that particular reflex. Hamza slowly lowered his hand, staring at Will.
Look, he said, his voice quiet. You got the predictions. You trusted me enough to tell me about them. We talked for a long time deciding what to do. This is what we came up with, and it will change both our lives forever. Forever. You didn't get instructions. You didn't get rules. If you find a $20 bill on the sidewalk, did it come to you for a reason? Are you obligated to do one thing or another with that 20? Fuck no! It's yours. Do whatever you want with it.
You always go financial, Will said.
That is not a bad thing. In fact, it's a good
Hamza stopped, shaking his head. He slapped down the cover of his laptop, setting the coffee table a wobble again.
You know what? He said, standing up. Forget it. Let's take the site down. Let's just...
Will watched Hamza pace back and forth. He didn't have much room to work. His path bounced between the entrance to the phone booth kitchen and the bathroom door, about 4 steps each way.
You get cold feet now when in oh...
Hamza pulled out his phone and checked the time, then held it out so Will could see it.
7 minutes, everything we've been working for will be right in our hands?
Hamza shoved his phone back in his pocket.
You're a guy with, forgive me, no future, and then you are literally given the future. But the possibilities in that just seem to terrify you, Hamza said. I mean, it's overwhelming, sure, but does that mean you should just sit on all this? Ignore it? Pretend you don't know the things you know? I mean, what the fuck, man?
Will watched his friend pace.
You're just as nervous as I am, aren't you? He said.
Hamza stopped, then collapsed back into the chair, rubbing his face with one hand.
Pfft, he said. You weren't at the lucky corner, Will said. It happened before I told you I was the Oracle. You don't know how wrong this shit can go. I do. Once you put this information out into the world, once you unleash it, you just have to sit there and watch what happens, knowing you did it. Everything that happens next is your fault. Hamza sighed.
I know, brother. Look, we can still turn this ship around if we do it now. In about 20 minutes, that won't be an option anymore. The predictions came to you, not me. I won't push it. If you want to stop, we'll stop. Don't even worry about it. I can get another job. And you...
Hamza gestured out at Will's shabby, overstuffed apartment.
You'll still have all this.
Will put his hand flat on the notebook, feeling the cardboard cover under his hand. It didn't feel warm. It didn't feel alive. But of course it was, in its way. He sat there thinking for what seemed like a long time. He tried to think it through, the same way he'd tried to think it through 1,000 times before, finding, as always, that it was just too big. Will let his mind go blank. He opened his mouth, curious to see what he would say.
Yes. Let's do it, he said. Tell me who I'll be talking to again.
Right, Hamza said, flipping his laptop open. It's a hedge fund. Starr, Wern, Bigby, and Greenboro. They manage assets valued in the neighborhood of $35 billion, investing in a wide variety of concerns from pharmaceuticals to agriculture to nanotech. What that means, Will, is that while we don't know what SWBG will be asking you about, we do know that it will concern one general area.
Money, Will said.
Yes, and they'll be tough. Expect them to try to bully you. That's how they do business. But remember, there's nothing they can actually do to you. They will absolutely threaten to sue you at some point, but whatever. They have no idea who or where you are. They'll be talking to the Oracle. They've never heard of Will Dando, and they never will.
Hamza frowned.
Assuming, that is, that the Florida ladies didn't screw up the security on this whole chat program thing they set up for us.
They didn't, Will answered. The ladies know what they're doing. And besides, with what these hedge fund guys paid to talk to me, the last thing they'll want to do is try to hack us somehow and scare me off.
Right, right,
Hamza said, holding up a hand to concede the point.
Will flipped his laptop open. The chat program was already up and running. Nothing fancy, just untraceable communication, text only, running on a Tor browser, through some sort of anonymized deep web channel.
Okay, all set. But they have a few minutes yet, he said. Can you check on the money? Make sure they didn't back out?
Hamza typed rapidly on his own machine, then grinned. He spun the laptop so Will could see the screen, displaying an account summary from a bank in the Cayman Islands. Account number 52IJ8549UIP000-LF8. Escrowed balance, U.S. dollars, $10,000,000.
Still there, Will said. Jesus. Still there, Hamza said. The bank will release it from escrow to us in about 3 minutes.
Unless something gets screwed up.
Nothing will get screwed up. Once it's out of escrow, it's ours, no matter what happens.
Will smiled.
Easy, he said.
Hamza nodded. Will's computer chimed, and his grin faded.
Shit, that's them, he said. Okay, okay, Hamza said. You're ready?
Will looked at his screen. He cracked his knuckles and set his hands on the keys.
Ready, he said.
Words appeared on his screen. SWBG. Is this the Oracle?
Oracle. It is.
SWBG. We will require proof before we authorize release of funds from escrow.
Oracle. No. You will release funds now, or we will leave. You have 30 seconds.
He looked at Hamza.
Gave them the ultimatum, he said. 30 seconds. Let me know.
Hamza stared at his screen, chewing on the edge of his thumb. Seconds ticked by. Will reached out his finger toward the keys, hesitated, then pulled them back. If this didn't work, he couldn't imagine getting up the nerve to try again, no matter what Hamza might say.
They paid, Hamza said. Transfer complete.
Will's entire body seemed to thrum, like a well-struck chord. His share was $5,000,000, no matter what happened next.
Okay, he said, putting his hands on the keyboard. Time to earn it.
The bank spoke first. SWBG. You have received $10,000,000 from us. If our 10-minute timer has begun to run, please be assured that we will pursue legal action as a consequence of your lack of response.
These guys are assholes, Will said.
What are they doing? Hamza started to get up to see. Will waved him back to his chair.
Threatened to sue me. Assholes. I'll call out the questions as they ask them.
Hamza cracked his knuckles and poised his fingers over his own keyboard.
You are speaking to the Oracle. The interview begins now, Will typed.
Hamza hit a timer on his screen, and 10 minutes began counting down. Almost immediately, the first question appeared. SWBG. Will the Medicare reforms described in H.R. 2258 be approved by Congress and the President?
Will laughed.
Oracle. No idea. SWBG. When and how will the following individuals die? James Starr, Joseph Wern, Edward Bigby, and Ira Greenborough.
Will said. Creepy.
What? Hamza asked.
They want to know when they're going to die.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Will hesitated, feeling Hamza staring at him and willing himself not to glance at the notebook.
No, he said.
SWBG. On what date and time will the Dow Jones Industrial Average exceed 20,000 points?
Oracle. I do not know.
Will typed, and then he typed it again, and again, after each new question appeared on his screen, wishing he'd just copied it to the clipboard.
God, they have to be pissed, he called to Hamza. 10 million bucks for a whole lot of nada.
Are you getting anything from the questions they're asking?
Tons, Hamza answered. He was furiously typing notes to himself, flipping through his papers.
They're tipping their hand left and right, telling me where they plan to invest. I can use that Medicare question alone to turn our 10 mil into 100 at least.
Explain it to me later, Will said. I almost feel bad for the...
He stopped, looking at the screen. SWBG. Do you have any information on the Florida citrus crop for this year's growing season?
Whoa, wait. I can answer this one. They got lucky, Will said. What do they have, like a minute or two left?
45 seconds, actually, Hamza said.
Okay, I'll type fast, Will said.
Like every time Will recalled a prediction, it was perfectly clear, every word, as if the notebook was open in front of him. He began to type. Oracle. Unusual weather patterns will cause a very late freeze that will sweep across much of the southeastern United States. This freeze will have a serious effect on the Florida crops. The freeze will occur on...
Stop!
Hamza said. Will looked up.
That's it?
10 minutes on the dot.
Huh,
Will said, taking his hands from the keyboard and looking at Hamza.
I could only answer one of their questions, and even that I didn't finish. Sort of a shame.
Hamza grinned at him.
No, my friend, not a shame. These guys knew the deal. We made no promises. And anyway, they make like 10 million bucks a day. Who cares? Besides, if they want more time, they can just buy it. Another 10 million buys another 10 minutes.
Ha, Will said. Not likely. Would you after that?
Who knows? These guys don't think the way we do.
Aren't you one of them? Will said. Great and powerful banker type.
Not anymore. I quit, remember? Now I'm just an independent businessman. Part of the backbone of this great nation.
SWBG. We wish to purchase another 10 minutes. The funds are being transferred to your account now. Please complete your response to the question concerning the Florida citrus crop. Will stared at his screen. He reached out and typed. Oracle. The freeze will occur on May 23rd. Below average temperatures will continue for approximately 1 week. The Florida crop will be 40% off normal numbers. SWBG. Is this all the information you can provide on this event? Oracle. Yes. Will waited. For the first time since the chat began, there wasn't an instant follow-up question. He glanced over at Hamza, who was giving him an odd look.
One of your predictions was specifically about the weather this May in Florida, and how it will affect the number of oranges in the supermarket?
Hamza said. Will nodded.
And not only did these guys happen to ask a question that would require that specific piece of knowledge to answer, but they asked it at exactly the moment that would require them to buy another chunk of time with us?
Will shrugged.
I've been asking myself questions like that since I had the dream, Hamza. I'm sort of beyond surprise at this point.
More words on the screen.
Okay, here we go, Will shouted. Your turn, Ham.
Ready, Hamza said. Very focused, staring at his computer.
SWBG. Is it possible for this information not to be released to any other parties? Oracle. Yes. SWBG. Under what terms? Hamza lunged for one of the binders on the coffee table. His knee knocked the edge, and the table finally collapsed, spilling spreadsheets, printouts, and laptops in a wide arc across Will's floor.
Fuck, Hamza said. Very deliberately.
Will ignored him and typed. Oracle. Make an offer. The timer on the remainder of your audience period will be halted during these negotiations. SWBG. What assurances do we have that once we purchase the exclusive rights to this information, it will not be sold to others? Will had prepared for this one. It seemed likely that this question might come up. Oracle. My word. And the assurance that if you don't make a deal with us,
I will definitely sell this information again if another buyer appears. Will lifted his hands from the keys, then had another idea. Oracle. Or I could post it on the site. You've bought the right to know about the Florida Freeze, not to own it. If you want exclusivity, tell us what you'll pay for it. A lengthy pause from the other side of the screen. Will imagined frantic calculations being made in a Masters of the Universe conference room, high above some city, stuffed with expensively suited old men he was visualizing as something like human buzzards. Behind him, he could hear Hamza shuffling rapidly through the papers on the floor, cursing to himself. SWBG. We'll pay you an additional $10 million for the exclusive rights to this information. $10 million, Will called over to Hamza. Is that a good offer?
Fuck no,
Hamza said, sitting on the floor, holding up double fists of spreadsheets.
I'm not finished yet, but I can tell you these guys are heavily invested in California agriculture. What do you think they grow out there?
Oranges.
Oranges, grapefruit, tangelos, you name it. And if Florida is off this year, that means California is way up. So their portfolio companies make lots of money there. Also, Hamza said, brandishing another piece of paper, there are rumblings that this fund is looking at investing in Florida farms, too. If there's a frost, a lot of farms will be hurting, looking to sell out. So they get a big foothold in the Florida market for cheap.
Okay, Will said. Break that down.
Breaking that down, it means SWBG will probably make around $1 billion off knowing about that Florida freeze ahead of time,
Hamza said.
So they'll have to pay a hell of a lot more than $10 million for it.
Hamza grabbed a pencil and started scribbling on the nearest sheets of paper, mumbling to himself. He dragged his laptop across the floor, and Will watched him pull up statistics on agriculture markets, historical impact of unseasonal weather, and all sorts of random esoteric financial data. It was alchemical.
Almost there? Time, Will, time! This is hard as hell! I want to get it right. If we underbid, we could be losing millions of dollars.
Will's heart was pounding. It had taken about 20 minutes for him to become the kind of person who gives out cars as birthday presents.
450,
Hamza said. He threw his pencil on the table.
450. That's my best bet. I'll tell you, there aren't many people who could have modeled that out for you in a couple of minutes. My brain's about to slide out my nose.
Will couldn't speak for a moment. He put his hands over the keyboard. They were shaking. Is that our opening offer? He managed.
No, that's it. That's what they have to pay if they want the info. That leaves them a healthy profit, an incredibly healthy profit. I even shaved some off to account for their reluctance in light of, well, the fact that this is also fucking bizarre.
Will shook his head. How can you be sure? What if we just piss them off?
We won't. They have the same information I do, and they can create the same projections. If you know how to do it, it's not guessing at all. It's fact.
Of course, he added, they probably had to put about 30 people on it to get the same answer. Will forced his hands to steady against the keyboard. Oracle. $450 million. There will be no further negotiations. This is the final and only price I will accept. Again, a pause, longer, like a stunned silence. SWBG. That is a considerable amount. It will take us some time to amass those funds.
Holy shit, Will said. They went for it. Of course they did,
Hamza answered.
And now they know we know what the hell we're doing.
They say they need time to get that much cash. How much do I give them?
Hamza thought for a few seconds. 72 hours. They can liquidate some assets if they have to, but their last fund prospectus said they had almost that much in investment accounts ready to go. They'll need some approvals and things, though. It's probably a valid request.
Oracle. Funds must be received within 72 hours. SWBG. Agreed. To the same account. Oracle. Yes. Should we complete the remainder of your interview period? SWBG. Yes, but one last thing. If you have defrauded us,
Please know that we will use every resource at our command to destroy you and get our money back. Will frowned, glaring through his laptop screen. His hands were suddenly very steady indeed. Oracle. Destroy me? 10 words on the site. That's all I'd need. For you or for anyone in the entire world. Think about that, assholes. Will finished the interview. He thought the fun seemed a bit muted after that last exchange. Understandable. He didn't know the answers to any of their remaining questions, which was well and good. The pressure of another hit might have killed him. He closed the chat program and looked at Hamza, who was back in the armchair, staring at their bank account balance on his computer. He seemed stunned, or even maybe a little bit stoned. Will leaned back on the couch and closed his eyes. Just oranges, he thought. Fruit, for God's sake. How much harm could it possibly do? Chapter 4 Reverend Hosiah Branson blinked the sweat out of his eyes and focused on the young woman in front of him. She smiled up at him, her eyes glazed in rapture. She wasn't beautiful, but she was earnest and devoted, and that made up for any plainness in her features. Branson could feel the surge coming over him. He threw his head back, closing his eyes. A stream of ecstatic noise poured out of his slack mouth, his tongue moving with its own will. He stiffened and reached out. He placed both hands on the woman's face. Her eyelids fluttered closed against his palms in spidery little spasms. One last gasp, and he pushed the girl's face away from him, his ululation ceasing at the same moment. He brought his arms around in a wide circle to clasp his hands in front of him. He opened his eyes. His deacons had caught the girl as she fell. She lay cradled in their arms like a newborn, her spindly pale limbs draped bonelessly this way and that. Branson reached out to her, his face clothed in a broad, reassuring smile. The girl grasped his hand. Her grip was faint, and he could feel her trembling. Hosiah pulled her to her feet.
Go now and walk in God's light, he said,
his voice amplified 100 times by the microphone on his lapel. The girl's face collapsed into a mess of overwhelmed tears and red-faced huffing. Spotlights nestled in the ceiling high above flared into life, painting out a path for the girl to walk back into the audience. One of the sisters appeared and took the girl's arm, gently escorting her away. Branson was tired. It was good work, but draining. She would be the last for today. He turned to face his audience, thousands upon thousands of people, arrayed in loose rows on the cathedral floor below him. Unceasing motion filled his view, people swaying, dancing, clapping their hands, all overcome with the glorious truth of the Lord. The sound of the crowd, somehow perfectly supported by the singing of the choir in their loft off to the left of the altar, rose to fill his cathedral, his beautiful stained glass palace. Branson lifted his hands above his head, and the choir held a long chord and abruptly ceased singing. The crowd quieted quickly, ready for what they knew was coming, the day's final sermon.
The oracle, he said, speaking softly, his voice picked up and amplified throughout the cathedral by his lapel mic.
A few shouts from the crowd. Condemnations, but mostly hushed, expectant silence.
The oracle is a poison, Hosiah continued. That monstrous thing, peddling lies to this world through the sight. I am so, so sad, to my very soul, to see that some few small-minded, faithless individuals have been suckered by its con game.
He paused, took a handkerchief from his breast pocket, mopped his brow. A deep breath, then a launch into the next phase, the red-faced, forceful blast of brimstone his audience expected.
Exodus 20, verse 5. Thou shalt not worship false idols, for God will not tolerate any affection for other gods. Do you hear that?
God will take his vengeance on those who worship pretenders. He is a jealous God, and rightly so, because he is the one true God. And woe, I say woe, to those who would challenge him. Exodus 20, verse 6. But if you worship the Lord and obey him, he will grant you love and care and great prosperity for all your days. The oracle is a tool of the devil. He may well be the devil, active in our daily lives in a seductive, novel fashion. The sight, giving us lies packaged as if they are great gifts. Is it any wonder that so many foolish people have bought into the devil's game in these godless times? But in spite of all this, I am hopeful, my friends. I have hope, for I know that you, my soldiers of Christ, you are well equipped to do battle with that sly trickster. You already have the only weapon you will ever need. Hosea reached behind him and held out his hand, palm up. An attendant slapped a leather-bound book into his hand, making a meaty, satisfying sound. Hosea held the book up to the crowd, stage lights glinting off the golden words etched into its cover. Right here, the word of the Lord himself, the Holy Bible. A resounding cheer rose up from the crowd, amens and hallelujahs and such. Hosea noted his usher circulating through the aisles with the collection plates. Denounce the sight. Denounce the oracle, wherever and however you can. Know that I am with you in this fight, as are all our brothers and sisters around the world. God bless you all, and I will see you soon. Hosea nodded to one of his deacons, a large man named Henry, and he and the rest of the men quickly positioned themselves behind him in a wedge with him as the point at the center. Television cameras on either side of the stage repositioned themselves, catching the scene from multiple angles. Hosea raised his arms heavenward. He knew the deacons behind him had done the same. They wore bright blue suit coats and red trousers, like a platoon of French Zouave. His own little army. And him in a blinding white suit, brighter than anything the spotlights were putting out, standing out in front like a general, the focal point of the stage's pageantry. The lights cut out, and Hosea slipped through a door set just behind and to the left of the stage, followed by his deacons. He entered a long, softly lit hallway. The carpet was a thick cream, and the walls were painted in exactly the same shade. As soon as the door closed behind him, the deacons stayed outside to make sure it stayed that way. The noise of the crowd vanished. The hall was thoroughly soundproofed. After the chaos of the stage, stepping into the hallway was like sliding into a bath of warm milk. Brenson walked down the hallway through another door and entered his office. He dropped heavily into the seat behind his desk, a sigh escaping his lips. He rubbed the bridge of his nose, pushing his glasses up toward his forehead. Letting them fall back into place, he ran that same hand across his hairless scalp. He grimaced, feeling a wash of sweat against his palm. Hosea checked his watch. Just a cheap model. The sort of thing you could buy at a drugstore. It wouldn't do to have the television cameras picking up anything too fancy. He reached across the top of his desk. An unadorned white expanse, like an ice floe, extending one finger toward a button set flush with the desktop. He rested his index finger on the button, but hesitated before pressing it. Come on, Hosea. Pull off the damn band-aid, he thought. He pressed the button. It moved downward with a slight whispery click, and almost before it had returned to its original position, a knock sounded from the wall opposite his desk. Come, Hosea called. A previously invisible seam opened in the wall and expanded into a door. A young, extremely slim man entered. Brother Jonas Block, Branson's executive assistant. His pinched, frowning face sat above a black suit and tie, with a crisp white shirt beneath. Undertaker chic.
How can I help, Reverend?
Brother Jonas's complexion was never robust, but at this moment he looked positively cadaverous, like a man made of white candle wax. His eyes darted to either side,